Good morning and welcome. You're tuned into 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft and it is Saturday morning, time for books, writing and literary culture. My name's Andrew Popel and this is the summer session of Final Draft, a chance to look back and think about all the great reading that we've done and also maybe find something that you can take down to the beach and just enjoy on your towel or work wherever you're celebrating summer. New Year's Eve's almost upon us. So it's the last Final Draft for the year. I'm going to actually share an Australian Classics Book Club with you. Normally, at the end of every month, we have an Australian Classics Book Club where we revisit a classic of Australian literature that you may not have read for a while. It might have been a little bit forgotten, so we're going to rediscover it. This is an episode that you didn't hear during the year. We are going to be discussing Robin Klein's Came Back to Show You I Could Fly. This show, we weren't able to air it in October, and so here is your chance to catch it for the first time. This is a fantastic, fantastic book. Like many of you, I grew up with Robin Klein's books, so I do remember her from sort of childhood, adolescence. Now's a chance to sort of go back and rediscover what books like Came Back to Show You I Could Fly had to tell you. And look, I'm going to wish everyone a happy new year. I'll do it again at the end of the show. But thank you so much for joining me here in the Final Draft sort of book space. I love doing this. I've been doing this for so many years now, sharing great Australian writing with all of you out there, listening in on your wireless wherever you are and sharing on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. I couldn't do this without you, and I hope you are enjoying great Australian writing across your summer. So we're going to go into the book club for Came Back to Show You I Can Fly, and then I'll say farewell for 2018 and the year in books.
Organising your perfect night out on New Year's Eve? This year, getting in and out of the city on December 31st is different. Make sure you have all the information you need for your Sydney New Year's Eve celebration. From accessibility info, road closures, firework vantage points and public transport options. Simply head to sydneynewyearseve.com. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You are on 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel, and if you have been checking off the days in your calendar, you know it is the last Saturday of the month, and it is time for the Australian Classics Book Club. It is a segment once a month where we delve back across the history of Australian writing and find a book that is worthy of attention, maybe one that hasn't gotten enough attention lately. Today, we are going to be discussing Robin Klein's Came Back to Show You I Could Fly, and joining me in the book club today is Jane Pearson. Jane's a senior editor at Text Publishing. They bring us the text classics, and you have met Jane before in the book club. I'm also joined by Simone Howe. Simone is the author of Notes from the Teenage Underground, Everything Beautiful, and Girl Defective. Now, if you're a regular listener, you would have met Simone a few months ago when we discussed her, along with co-authors Kath Crowley and Fiona Wood, winning CBC a Book of the Year for Older Readers, Take Three Girls. Simone, Jane, welcome to the book club.
Thanks, Andrew. Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. It's always so exciting to share books like this. But before we do get to Came Back to Show You I Could Fly, Jane, can you give us an introduction to Robin Klein? Much loved and I think probably much well known as she is to many Australian readers.
Well, much loved indeed. That was the first thing on my list to mention. Not only much loved, award-winning and very, very prolific writer with, I think, around about 70 books over a period of about 20 years. So she was working hard. Robin Klein was born in 1936 in Kempsey in New South Wales. That's somewhere along the mid-north coast of New South Wales into a farming family. She was one of nine kids, so quite a childhood, I'd imagine. And I think she must have been writing from a very early age because she left school, Newcastle Girls High, at the age of 15, which probably wasn't all that unusual for girls at that time, and had her first story published just a year later. So she was clearly onto something. she had many jobs before becoming a full-time writer, about 30 years later. So just to give you a little bit of a taste, she'd been a tea lady, a telephonist, a bookshop assistant, a photography teacher, a nurse, a library assistant, a painter, a potter, and a copper enameller, as well as many other things, including being mother to four children. So busy as well. Her books are, as you said earlier, so well loved. People might remember the Penny Pollard books or Hating Alice and Ashley, which was made into a very successful film. The Melling Sisters trilogy, which are wonderful books set in the 1940s and based on her memories of that time, and they're also in the text classics. I might just slip in, and then came back to Show You I Could Fly was published in 1989, and that was one of the books that won the CBCA award, and it also won a Human Rights Award, which is very interesting, and I think once you read it, you understand why. Robin also won the Dromkeen Medal and the New South Wales State Literary Award. People who grew up or were reading in the 90s just love her. She was at the centre of it all. Sadly for me, I didn't discover her until I was an adult, but never mind. I made up for lost time.
You're going to have some really interesting perspectives, I feel, then, Jane, having approached Robin Klein, I guess, from a different point in your life.
Well, that's right. I think I had a very maternal kind of response to this book for the two main characters in there.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, well, let's introduce the book. Came Back to Show You I Could Fly begins in a hot, stifling room as Seymour wakes to another claustrophobic day of confinement. He's staying with Thelma, a family friend at her house, while his mother secures him new accommodation. It's school holidays, and Seymour must not leave the house on fear that his ne'er-do-well father might kidnap him to some unknown fate. So in a show of uncharacteristic rebellion, Seymour escapes over the back gate to explore his new world, only to be harassed by some local kids. Fleeing through the nearest gate, Seymour stumbles upon the sunbathing form of Angie, and together they begin a strange new friendship. Now, I'm being purposefully vague here because Robin Klein, in her unveiling of Angie's character in particular, it can be quite vague on detail. As we see the world through Seymour's eyes, we're really only privy to his naive view and the insights that are gleaned with the experience of only 11 years. So I confess, my most enduring memory of Came Back to Show You I Could Fly is the cover, and Simone, you mentioned this also in your intro, that really quite striking cover, something cinematic about it, and you mentioned the woman on the cover looks like Meg Ryan. And look, a lot of Robin, the other feeling that I get from Robin Klein's books is this feeling that I was discovering something that wasn't part of my everyday world. And we're going to get more into what about Came Back to Show You I Can Fly that exactly is. But what were both of your experiences and recollections of Came Back? Simone, let's start with you, because Jane's already given us a bit of an idea of how she came to Robin Klein.
Yep. So I guess I came of age to Robin Klein's writing. So 1989 was the year that I finished high school. So I was already kind of like edging out of the market of reading, you know, young adult literature. But I kind of knew about it for a couple of reasons. I mean, I had read her books prior to it. And one of the things I knew about Robin Klein was that she lived not that far from where I lived. She lived out in the hills in the hills of the Dandenong Ranges. So I kind of had this strange connection anyway, just from that. And I think whenever I read her fiction now, and especially coming back to it as an adult, it is very much like I'm reading about people I knew or people that I might have known or people who were going to end up that way or that sort of thing. And we came back to Show You I Could Fly. My sister had done work experience on the film Dogs in Space, and Richard Lowenstein, the director of that film, did a film version. And later he said something about you cannot make a film about drug use that's for children. And, yeah, so that's kind of like how I sort of came to it, because growing up where I grew up, in the suburbs of Melbourne, drugs were around, darkness was around, but it wasn't always immediately in your face. And this book, I think, just does such an amazing job of kind of showing what might be attractive or, you know, and then kind of going behind the surface so that we see what's actually going on. Spoilers all over the place.
It's really interesting, too, that sort of attractive side of it, because it's not so much that we see the attractive side of drug use, but we see through Seymour's really sheltered eyes, if that metaphor makes sense, this glamorous, colourful, life-loving and life-affirming, quite spectacular girl who just presents to him everything that isn't in his life, and he's immediately attracted to it. And because we're seeing it through an 11-year-old's eyes, everything that we pretty quickly come to realise is sort of kitsch glamour and not very tasteful. He sees just the epitome of glamour, and she just steps into his life in a moment where there is nothing but boredom, and there she is looking so wonderful and being so wonderful to him. She's gorgeous in the way she takes him under her wing and looks after him in a really beautiful and caring way.
I love a bit of kitsch, so I particularly took umbrage at her family's reaction to the way she dressed. But I really am interested in the way we have these two compelling protagonists. Seymour, partly because he is our point of view, and Simone, you sort of mentioned there, you're a bit younger than Angie is in Came Back to Show You I Can Fly when it was released. I was a bit younger than Seymour at the same time, and that really got me thinking about this idea of identification. Do you think in a book like Came Back to Show You I Can Fly, there are particular elements that might lead a reader to identify with one or the other of our protagonists, be it age, be it gender, be it situation in life?
I know that with me, identification wasn't particularly to the characters, but more to the theme and more to the idea of one, Seymour's kind of a loneliness and feeling of kind of, you know, I guess trapped in his own life and under, you know, he's not really, he doesn't have his own agency. And I think one of the things that he must see in Angie is that she just looks like she does whatever she wants, and she does do whatever she wants. And of course she does it to the detriment of everyone around her, but he doesn't realize this because he's 11 and he's only just met her. So there's kind of that.
I think there's also that sense, or I remember it from my childhood, of terminable boredom. I was just waiting for something, please, to happen. And so I felt a strong identification with that, even though I, you know, as an adult, was certainly a lot older than both the protagonists.
Do you ever wonder where that boredom went? Because I do also remember being bored as a child, and I don't think I am ever bored now, to the point that I wish I could be a little bit bored sometimes and not have so many things pressing on my brain.
We're all just way too busy.
Has the world changed, or did we just get older?
Well, I think the world has changed, but I think it is also kind of the coming of age thing. And I was thinking, like, this story would have been different if Seymour had been maybe 13, you know, just that little bit older, then it kind of wouldn't work, because I think part of the fact that Angie is so kind of lovely with him and pays attention to him, no one's paying attention to him at all, you know. Even his parents aren't even paying attention to him. And she does in this sort of, you know, manner of the older sister that you really admire.
There is something timeless about Seymour, though, and he's constantly referred to by Angie, by the bullies that sort of ultimately chase him into Angie's path, as a sort of a little old man in a child's body. And I wonder if at 13, had the events of Came Back to Show You I Not Fly, had they not transpired for him, whether at 13 he would have still been the same sort of slightly hapless elderly young man.
Well, he learns to stand up for himself so beautifully, and she gives him that gift, really, I think. And it's really quite beautiful when he does, because he notices in himself that he doesn't, that he'll apologize for things that aren't his fault. He'll just assume that he shouldn't be, think that he's somehow responsible for things being not quite right in someone else's eyes. And it's really heartbreaking as you sort of want to put your arm around him and go, no, it's okay. But the first time he stands up for himself is to Thelma, the woman he's staying with, who's really quite sort of strict and cold with him, even though you get the sense that she's probably very well-meaning. And when he does tell her that actually what he thinks is that this situation isn't that great and that his mother's over-dramatised and all of that, it sort of all blurts out of him. And he's almost shocked at his own behaviour. He gets this wonderful response from her, a kind of acknowledgement of all of this. And it's so, you just see him stand, you feel him stand just that little bit taller. And then, of course, towards the end, when he finally confronts Angie with what's actually going on, he's really great. He's really slowly but surely learnt from her that you just got to say it. You've got to stand up and do it.
My heart broke a little for Thelma in that scene, though, because there's no sense of her railing against Seymour. She immediately is compassionate to his situation. And I wondered perhaps if Thelma was perhaps a little like Seymour herself growing up, and maybe there is something of Thelma that Seymour's fate of leading a very proper, organised, orderly life for fear of ever going outside those boundaries.
Yeah.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, where you're in the Australian Classics Book Club. I'm speaking with Jane Pearson and Simone Howell, and we're discussing Robin Klein's Came Back to Show You I Could Fly. Now, we're going to take a quick music break, and I'm going to indulge in some nostalgia. Came Back to Show You I Could Fly came out in 1989, so we're going to take a track from 1989. It sort of fits with the book as well. This is Died Pretty with Everybody Moves. Good morning. Welcome back. You are on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. That was Died Pretty from 1989 with the track Everybody Moves. And we went back to 1989 because you're in the Australian Classics Book Club and we are discussing Robin Klein's 1989 novel, Came Back to Show You I Could Fly. My name is Andrew Popel. I'm joined in the book club by Jane Pearson from Text Publishing and Simone Howell. And we're getting into the real sort of nitty-gritty of the story and some of the darker themes. What is happening beneath the surface here under the whimsy of these sort of school holiday excursions that Angie devises for Seymour? There's a story of abuse that emerges. We learn that Seymour's dad hits him or has hit him, and that his mum really terrorises him in a way that we might sort of recognise as a sort of a non-physical abuse. Mm-hmm. There's drugs. Angie constantly refers to the flu that she suffers from that Seymour kind of puzzles through. These are mm-hmm. topics that we still debate as to the suitability for young readers. And in fact, Seymour almost presents himself as the perfect innocent, uncorrupted, the sort of young reader that people would like to protect from these topics. Mm. How did you find their treatment in Came Back to Show You I Could Fly? The treatment of these topics?
Well, it's interesting because I read this thinking, if this came along now, this would be quite difficult to publish for all those reasons, because it'd be like, oh, we've got a young protagonist and we've got a drug addict. This, no one's going to want kids anywhere near this. But that is to just sort of misunderstand the book so terribly, because what Robin Klein gives us first is this beautiful friendship and these two characters who are really full and rounded, and she gives us the Angie's drug addiction as a terribly destructive part of her, but only a part of her. We see her and we get to know her before we know about this. And so yep. we have an understanding of the... We have such a connection to her before we see her as someone who's a drug addict. So she puts it into a really wonderful perspective, I think, where it's something that it's an unfortunate and problematic and destructive thing about her, but it's not her. And that seems to me to be such a wonderful thing, and a way of looking at people who are suffering this kind of life in a very, very different way. I don't know what that says about whether it's suitable for children, but why not?
Why not? Yeah, is it suitable? Yeah.
Interesting, that idea that, a book now with an 11-year-old protagonist, we would assume that it's for an 11-year-old readership. Yeah. It would be a middle-grade novel. It wouldn't be, this is kind of like why I could imagine it being also problematic to try and market because of the way things are today. Mm. But, what a shame that would be if it had never been published, because it is. It's beautiful. And it's so human. It's so kind of, allowing the reader to sort of see behind, this unpleasantness, of real life.
And we actually see very little of it. There's a moment where things get quite tense at the races, where it seems she's met up with someone from that world she owes money to, and there's a real sinister sense there. But otherwise, we sort of piece it together from bits of evidence, rather than see firsthand the darkness and the ugliness and the difficulties of her life, because we see what Seymour sees. We see it in a different way, a much more perceptive way, but we see her wearing her fabulous earrings, dreaming of being a florist and living in a mansion and on one day and then something else on another, and having all these wonderful but clearly unrealistic dreams for herself. Robin Klein's sort of careful, I think, not to give us the darkness of when she goes and takes the drugs. We know when she goes off to do it, but we don't ever actually see it.
But and of course, it's also the deft way that Robin Klein does it. I mean, we've talked about our point of view is Seymour, and the story unfolds through his perspective. And it's a really quite limited view of the world. We are almost locked behind that gate with him. Mm-hmm. But then we have Robin Klein dropping in the snippets of letters and lists and correspondence from and about Angie.
Yeah.
And reading it as an adult, this is so wonderful and such a knowing nod to the reader. It's absolutely horrendous, the scene you mentioned before where we had the encounter at the races with the sort of the overbearing man. And then later on we have Angie's sister, it's Lynn, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, Angie's sister Lynn make the sort of almost throwaway comment, you have no idea how she gets her money sometimes. And in my head, I'm like, oh, gosh, okay, he was either a pimp or he is trading sexual favours for drugs. And potentially many young readers would not make that connection, but as an older reader, it's glaring. So it works on so many levels there.
Those inserted letters and lists and things are just so heartbreaking too, because you really understand how much she's trying, but also how hopeless she is at trying. And she's all alone too. You know, she's through treating people so badly, or you know, not intentionally, but through letting people down over and over again for 5 years, as we learn, she's pushed everybody away from her, and she's truly alone with this. This terribly difficult thing to deal with, just scraping together money for her rent at one moment and then seeming to be very flush another. And also, sorry, I'm hesitating because I don't know whether to spoil with the pregnancy.
it's a book club. We have to trust that people have read the book a little bit.
If not, they need to.
They do. Everyone needs to read it. Simone, I actually feel like I poorly introduced you before, because as well as all your wonderful books, you wrote the introduction to Came Back to Show You I Could Fly. And in that introduction, you describe Robin Klein's books as literary hymns to the nowhereness of adolescence.
Yes.
And I wondered, do you or do we feel that a book like Came Back holds up today in a world where YA has come to be dominated and even identified by franchises like Harry Potter, The Hunger Games and their ilk? Where does it stand now?
See, look, this is where it's difficult, because I don't know whether I'm just kind of totally numbed by nostalgia or...
On the table, we all loved it.
I feel like it's the true story of what goes on. I feel like it's what sort of... The feelings and the emotions that are in this book are still what the feelings and emotions of young people are today, much more so than books like sort of something like Hunger Games or, you know, I feel like those books are just these kind of, I don't know, entertainments and distractions and, I don't know, that's dismissive. I don't mean to dismiss them as well, but, yeah, this book...
It's got depth, I think, is one of the things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it just feels real, I guess. That's
And I think, too, Robin Klein never underestimates her readers. She's written something with a lot of complexity and nuance, and she just lets the readers take what they will from that, which is a really wonderful thing, I think, for
And it's 190 pages or something. It's slim as, you know. It just... Words are not wasted in any way. Like, I just think I wish more people would read it.
You are in the Australian Classics Book Club. We are discussing Came Back to Show You I Could Fly by Robin Klein. I'm speaking with Jane Pearson. She's a senior editor at Text Publishing. And Simone Howell, her along with her co-authors Kath Crowley and Fiona Wood, her latest book won the CBCA Book of the Year for Older Readers. It was Take Three Girls. Simone, Jane, thank you so much for joining me in the book club. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. My name's Andrew Popel. Thank you again for tuning in for that Australian Classics Book Club discussing Robin Klein's Came Back to Show You I Could Fly. It is time for me to say goodbye for another episode and for the year. I hope you have an amazing New Year's Eve, whatever you are doing. I hope you start 2019 fresh, and I hope it is filled with many amazing books for you. I will be back with new books after the final draft summer session, so I hope you'll come and join me for many more great reads. My name is Andrew Popel. A huge Happy New Year. I'll see you again in 2019. Bye now.